Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I don't feel like we should be thinking at age 14, 13, 17 that school is a prison. Adding more police will make us feel like we're literally in jail. Why do you want more Black and brown people feeling like they're in jail already?
Aaliyah Blackman is a junior at Miami Norland Senior High School. She was on the show back in June. In what feels like a defining year in the direction of our country, people like Aaliyah are finding their voice.
I'm pretty sure Parkland will never have another shooting. I can tell you that in my community, there will be another shooting sometime soon.
I think that she's right.
That's Jelani Cobb, staff writer for The New Yorker. I spoke to him about whose voices we value when it comes to discussions on race and how the debate on gun violence is just one example of a much broader issue of leadership that falls along racial lines.
The reality of it is that we're looking at two completely different relationships to gun violence in this country, one of which elicits sympathy far more frequently and far more easily than the other does. I was just thinking about this for something I was working on recently, which is the first person who I knew who was killed. And that happened when I was 17. And now I'm 48 years old. This is not a new problem. It's a high school classmate of mine who was killed the week after graduation. It is an intergenerational familiarity that should be cause for outrage. But we weigh these experiences differently because we value the people who experience them differently.
So who should be the leader on this? Or where does this come from?
I think that touches on so many other problems. I mean, we have people who wear the title of leader and leadership, but nothing has happened. And that goes back to the way that our campaigns are financed, to Citizens United and decisions before that, to the power of lobbies, to the whole array of things that have jammed the works of people representing the interests of the population, where the majority, vast majority of people are in favor of some form of reasonable gun reform. And that can't happen. And so I think that that's part of it. And so what we're seeing is a kind of return to grassroots individual initiatives because of the failure of the political process. And it's fallen onto the shoulders of people who are most likely to be affected, as leadership often is. The young people who are saying, I should not be attending funerals for my peers at this point in my life.
Do you think this suggests that this is where leadership is going to happen and where change is going to happen, is people saying, the national is broken, I'm going to focus on my community? Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, are you worried that the disconnect between the community and the national does still lead us to not solving these big problems that impact all of us? If the national is broken, you can do a ton at the community level, but it's only going to get you so far.
Mm-hmm. So I think this is really a question about how people maintain optimism. You know, if you're looking at this very bleak national picture and this ineffective machinery that's supposed to deliver change to people's lives, and you take it upon yourself to change where you can, maybe in a small way on a local level. But I think what makes it possible to still be optimistic in that context is that there are examples of this kind of change happening, that there are examples of mores shifting over time. Sometimes it's a protracted process, but it does happen. And so one of the things I think that's been notable is that when we talk to people who were opponents of the death penalty, there's been very little legislation on the death penalty in the past decade. But the drop, the really severe drop in the death penalty and its application has come almost entirely from local grassroots efforts. electing DAs who were not inclined to pursue the death penalty, whether it was for plain fiscal, practical reasons or for broader moral reasons, that there are juries that are decreasingly willing to impose the death penalty, that there are scholars and journalists putting out information about the numbers of people who are being exonerated from death row and creating a crisis of conscience for the public. And so people began asking themselves the question, do they really, really know that by having this policy, we won't ultimately wind up executing someone who is innocent? And I think that is one of the most salient examples of the degree of change that can happen by individual and community and local activities that ultimately add up to having a much bigger cumulative effect.
So who's leading the conversation on race in America right now? We like to think of that as a way we looked back at Martin Luther King as the leader at the time. Is that the case now?
No, I don't think that there's a kind of individual who's leading a conversation, because I don't think that Martin Luther King was leading the conversation then. He was maybe one of the more visible people in that conversation, but there were lots of other voices. And I think that we profit when we have a wide array of conversations happening simultaneously. And it's unfortunate that because of the inflammatory and demagogic commentary that we often hear from the president of the United States, that conversation is happening at a decibel higher than it might otherwise. But generally speaking, we don't need one person to be in charge of it.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Jelani Cobb, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Jelani Cobb is a staff writer for The New Yorker who writes about race, politics, history, and culture. And we want to hear from you. How are you feeling about the state of American leadership today? Is there adequate leadership on the issues that matter to you?
This is Steve in Alphabet City, and I got to say no. Where to begin? We're going nowhere on climate change because we're the only country in the world where people debate whether or not it even exists. We're going backwards on racism, and it's only gotten harder to be black in terms of wealth and income since 1980. And our elected officials consistently vote in the interests of their corporate paymasters. Public opinion has basically zero effect on them.
This is Anne calling from Minneapolis. As far as adequate leadership, this administration has given none. There has been negative role models abounding, including and especially the top military.
Hi, this is Laura from Jersey City, New Jersey. No, I don't think we have any leadership. In Jersey City, we have a big problem with the politicians and the corruption. Also, we have a big problem with crime. We don't have the MS-13, but we have regular criminals, Americans born here, that are robbing, stealing, killing, domestic violence. When are we going to take care of those issues? That's what really concerns me.
We always want to hear from you. Tweet me, @AmyEWalter, or tweet us, @TheTakeaway.